Thank you for joining us today for the Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors meetings. I hope everybody's having a great day and keeping warm during these chilly, chilly days. So before I begin, I did want to say my name is Jennifer Lada. I'm the Executive Assistant. I'm joined today by Barbara Torres, who's the HR Administrator. I did want to give two brief reminders. First, this meeting is now being recorded. And second, if you are a member of the public and you would like to give a comment during the public comment section of this meeting, you're more than welcome to state your name. If it's something that you don't feel comfortable in doing, you don't have to state your name. However, to the members of our staff and board members, please state your name before speaking. So let's begin tonight's Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors meetings. The day is November 12, 2020. The time is 5:35 p.m. Rabbi Billick, may you please call the meeting to order?
Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome everyone to our meeting. We are now in a formal session, and the first thing that we do is approve the agenda. Oh, wait. We want to take roll for be sure we have a quorum.
Yes. Thank you, Rabbi Belia. So now I'm going to take roll. Rabbi Belia?
Yes.
Dr. Yapano?
Yes.
Dr. Dikpesh?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez? Ms. Covarrubias?
Here.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Here.
Perfect. We have quorum to begin tonight's meeting. Did want to say next is the approval of the agenda. The motion is to approve the agenda as presented with the removal of action item 3C, injury and illness prevention program, COVID-19, addendum MPS health and safety policy for COVID-19. This will be brought up at a later meeting. Would a board member like to move this motion?
I make the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Would someone like to second?
Second, Dr. Yapanel.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanel, for seconding. I will now take vote. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Dikpesh?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The agenda has been approved as amended. Barbara?
So at this time, I think we're open to public comment.
Yes, Rabbi Belia, thank you for that. So just as a reminder, as we announced in the beginning of the meeting, our meeting is being recorded. Any member of the public who'd like to give a public comment at this time is limited to 3 minutes per speaker, 6 minutes if translation is needed. We did have one public speaker form completed and returned to us. So we do have this member of the public on the phone, and we have Ms. Chandrea Daniel. Ms. Daniel, you have 3 minutes.
Yes, good evening, board members. I come to you, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, I come quickly because I have exhausted all measures to collaborate on my MPS evaluation. I have been in communication with Home Office and Human Resources since June of this year about my evaluation from the 2019-2020 school year, and have been unsuccessful in having my questions answered or response to what was included by the Home Office team. There are missing key elements and details that would uphold the validity of the contents included within my evaluation. And I am publicly asking for a meeting with whomever wrote my evaluation within Home Office, as well as Alfredo Rubalcaba and the entire Board of Directors, because the items within the evaluation lack validity and is a misalignment with the policies and procedures and protocols to be upheld by Magnolia Public Schools. There is a lack of fiduciary merit with respect to the MPS employee evaluation protocol and I will submit a formal request for a meeting and provide evidence to support my perspective. I want to thank you, and I hope you're all safe and you have a great meeting, and I will be in touch.
Thank you, Ms. Daniel. We did not have anyone else sign up for a public comment, but at this time, is there anyone on the line who'd like to give a public comment? I'm sorry, if you do not have a public comment, can you please make sure you are on mute? Again, is there any other public comment? Okay. Rabbi Beliak, did you want to announce anything before we move on to the next item?
Simply to say that I'm glad that we have received this communication, and we will refer this to staff and ask them to be in touch with us. And it's our practice not to comment publicly on matters brought before us, but we do take this very seriously. We will discuss this, and I'd like to ask that a board member be designated to be part of the follow-up to ensure that concerns are addressed quickly and in a thoughtful manner. Is there a board member that would like to be appointed here? I'm happy to volunteer myself. Anyone else?
I think we have a personnel committee that handles these type of things.
Good. Could you remind me, Mr. Yapanow, who is on the personnel committee?
That's a question for our executive assistants, I think.
Okay. Who is on our personnel committee?
It is. We have our stakeholder committee. The personnel one was merged, but I can't seem to exit the Zoom to get that for you. But give me 1 second. I'm trying to exit out of this screen. Okay, I'm recording the meeting. I can't get out of the screen. But you can just assign the stakeholder committee, and the members that are part of that committee will take over.
Okay. In any case, I'd like to be an ex officio member and be informed of what's going on with that. If there are no other public comments, I'd like to invite our CEO, who normally at this time makes announcements and brings us up to date with a general report. This, I think, is a very important part of our meeting, especially since we have less regular contact, and most of our contact is done by phone or by Zoom. So I appreciate Alfredo bringing us up to date on matters of concern.
Thank you, Rabbi, and welcome Magnolia family, community, leadership. So I come before you first and foremost hoping that everyone is well and that your families are well. And all of us have been very busy over the last couple of weeks since we last met in October. So I did want to start off with our wonderful executive assistant, or what we call our health and safety appointee, Jennifer Wade, to give us an update on health and safety, and then I will fill in the blanks when it comes to the presentation. So with that, Jennifer, take it away.
Good evening, everyone. Will we have the presentation up? Okay. Good evening, everyone. So my name is Jennifer, and I'll be providing a COVID update. Quite a bit of things have changed since the last time we spoke back in October. The most significant being that San Diego is now in the purple tier, and that just happened as of November 10th. As you can see in the little screenshots that I added, San Diego was in the red tier up until November 4th, and then just recently they've been pushed back to the purple tier. LA County is still in purple tier, no change there, and OC is still in the red tier, and all of this is as of November 10th. Next slide, please. The metrics, this slide is just to remind everyone of what the metrics are and what California is looking at, and how they determine what tier, what county is in what tier. So for the purple tier, your adjusted case rate is greater than 7 and your testing positivity is greater than 8%. There's also the health equity metric that is determined with the items there on the side. And in order for a county to be bumped to a lower tier or to a higher tier, they have to be in that lower or higher tier for 14 days. Next slide. So some local county updates. There hasn't been many updates from the OC. The update from San Diego is that they were pushed back to the purple tier. The LA County did provide an update to their K-12 protocols. The last update they made was October 27th, and during our call today with the county, they did mention they were going to update it again. Some of the items that have changed since the last meeting is that the percentage of students allowed on campus for small group instruction has increased to 25%. Previously, it was 10%. Schools can now have students on campus to administer college admission tests like the SAT, the pre-SATs, and so on. And then LA County has also opened a waiver program for schools with TK through second grade only. They are approving schools weekly and trying to get elementary schools back up for those TK through second grade. And then again, I've included links to all of the county public health departments. And then that link at the very bottom there is to LA County TK through 12 toolkit. So this page includes information related specifically to schools. So all of the protocols, all of the guidance information related to schools is at that link there. Next slide. So as of today, MPS is open to students in small cohort in the small cohort capacity for MSA 1, 2, 6, 7, San Diego and Santa Ana. Santa Ana unfortunately did not open for hybrid November 2nd due to a spike in cases in Santa Ana, and co-located sites are still awaiting for more guidance from LAUSD to be able to open for small groups. So that's all I have for today. Alfredo, do you have anything to add?
Thank you, Jennifer, as always, very comprehensive. Yes. So I do want to add that all of our board members and community members are aware that we're continuing to do distance learning all the way up till the end of the first semester for 9 out of our 10 schools. And in San Diego, we're going to revisit things in January. So we will make a decision soon by December 1st to make, some roadway into what January looks like for our schools. So we'll continue to monitor all the different tiers, colored tiers from the different counties, and we will continue to receive feedback from all of our stakeholders in making a decision. So we will keep the board apprised of what that looks like for our schools to reopen in hybrid or to continue in distance learning. From an academic front, we will have an academic committee meeting that's going to be right before our next board meeting, December 10th. So you'll get a comprehensive update on everything specific to academics. So very excited to share that with you. And in terms of our work, I just want to acknowledge all the school sites, the home office, in preparing the schools to be ready to reopen in hybrid. And although we're not open in hybrid, we've taken some really extensive measures to prepare our schools with all the safeguards in order to have a safe environment. And we've had visits from the LA County Department of Public Health, and they've been able to have very good reviews of our work. So I'm just very thankful to all of the team members for working hard on that front. So with that, we open it up to any questions that the board might have specific to the presentation or anything specific to our schools.
All right, if there's nothing,
I just want one quick question. So what are we doing with small cohorts in the schools that has that capacity?
Great question. I'll turn it over to Erdinch to give some more specifics. There was different approaches that we took, or different phases when it came to small group instruction following cohorting guidance. So Erdinch could give some detail.
Yes, good evening, board members. So with regards to cohort, meaning that we're not open in a hybrid in-person format, but we are allowed to bring certain populations to our school sites. We took some steps and with the health and safety protocols and the guidance we get from counties, we were able to move in that direction. So first we started testing our kids with English language learners, their initial and summative assessments. You know, that's been done already completed in our school sites. Again, and to the extent that is allowed to be in person at the sites that are allowed currently at the US school sites, co-located sites are not giving us permission to bring any students in place, but the other schools have been doing that. Also, moving and next step with the students with disabilities, we are bringing students for assessments and related services as well. Again, that's in the non-co-located sites other than LAUSD sites. With LAUSC sites, we're we're receiving some communication, but it was a slow process. The testing program with the district and in our program, we need to comply with certain the regulations and the requests from LAUSD. That's in negotiation at this point. So once we have that in place, we'll be able to open our LAUSD sites for cohort and then related support services as well. So cohort cohort reopening allows us to address needs of other populations other than students with disabilities and ELs. In cases schools are ready and they present their plans to us. We do review extensively, go over their schedules and the programs and staffing. And then we're working with our COVID-19 health and safety team, make sure that when we bring those kids on sites, we also pay attention to the health and safety measures. So those are current our current cohort measures and the programs.
Thank you so much. I am all for bringing as much students as possible, especially lower grades, as much as possible to the school sites. I just feel that this distance learning is hurting them the most.
Could you repeat that, please? I didn't hear you clearly.
Oh, I am in favor of bringing as many students as possible, especially at-risk populations and lower grades, because I feel that having a daughter in those grades, they are being impacted negatively by the distance learning.
So I had a question along those lines. This is Rabbi Chaim. My question was, in sites that are not co-located with LAUSD or any other place that are, let's say, within reasonable distance, is there enough room at those sites that we are in charge of to bring more people and maintain the proper distancing and safety precautions so that we could get more of the kids that can meet at least having an opportunity to be together properly at a site? So for instance, MSA1 is in the valley. Are there ways that some people that are in the valley could go to MSA1 in the lower grades? Is there a rule against that? Sorry if it's a question that's obvious to everyone else but me.
Yeah, that's a great question, Rabbi. So specific to the amount of students, as Jennifer spoke about during her presentation, right now we are allowed to have 25% of the student body on campus. So have we ramped up to 25%? No. We're probably currently at the 2%, 3%. Why? Because it does require us to get everyone on board, from teachers, families, and the entire school community to figure out scheduling. And our first objective was to finalize all the initial assessments from our English language learners and then go on to our SPED assessments. So the next step, of course, would be to expand it to other students, those in need that haven't connected to, you know, their distance learning, whatever the work, the school environment, the home environment was that didn't allow them to do that. We're looking to ramp those numbers up. But currently 25%, we're nowhere there. We're nowhere near that point right now, but we will scale up as the weeks progress. So we'll keep you posted on that. In terms of having you know, those students that are on co-located sites where we're awaiting guidance from LAUSD, can they come on to other campuses? Is that allowed? Yes, it is allowed, as long as we're adhering to the same policies and procedures, and we are getting consent from the families that they're okay with coming onto the site to do other things. So from a logistical standpoint, it's not too difficult. From a communicating with parents, making sure we have the right personnel, it can happen. We have started doing some of that with some of our schools, especially for our initial LPAC assessments. So we will continue to look at those avenues. I do expect us to get more information from LAUSD regarding on how we come back to the campuses and us to make a decision with the board and the teams at the school sites. I do believe something will happen within the next 2 weeks. So we will bring that to you. And at that time, we could share what the plans will look like for the co-located sites on LAUSD premises.
So just so that, this is Rabbi Chaim again. Just so I understand, if we have a site, let's say like MSA1, that's at 2 or 3% capacity, and we have other Valley schools that are co-located, if we got the permissions and we had the lower grades, we could, in theory, bring them to MSA1. Is that an issue about not only providing transportation and parental approval, what other hurdles would we have to meet?
There's no hurdles. And just to be clear, our elementary school in the Valley, MSA 7, can offer small group instruction. So we have an opportunity at 7 to ramp up from the current number we have, right? If you're referring to lower grades at 6th grade and 7th grade and 8th grade, then in the case of MSA 1, you have MSA 5. And that would be the only school that right now is being restricted because we're waiting for LAUSD. MSA 2 is currently open to ramp up. We're working with them and LAUSD to understand what we need to do with the testing to ramp up at MSA 2 because they are on an LAUSD campus, although they're not a Prop 39 school, right? So I think the only thing right now would be MSA 5 students attending MSA 1. And again, that's not difficult. That's something, again, that we have done, not to a large scale, but we have done some testing. And sorry, it would be MSA 5 to MSA 7. We've done that, you know, kind of collaborative work. But we could also do the same at MSA 1 if we needed to. And then Santa Ana is already offering small group instruction. We're nowhere at the point we need to be. They're still at a small percentage, so we wouldn't have an issue to then ramp up those efforts. But again, it does require staffing, you know, speaking to our teachers, making sure that our teachers could come onto the site and do the small group instruction, and making sure we have a balanced approach when it comes to doing that. So yes, it's not difficult. It does require consent. And also for us to get people on board when it comes to staffing. I hope that answered your question.
It does, thank you. Are there other questions?
Perfect, if there's no other questions, we'll move on. Next on the agenda, we have the approval of minutes. This is from our regular Magnolia Public Schools board meeting for October 8th. Would a board member like to move this motion?
Yes, I'd like to move it. This is Amit.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanel. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak. I will now take vote. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbas?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez? Oh, my apologies. Before I forget, for minutes purposes, Ms. Gonzalez joined us. Ms. Gonzalez, could you hear us or are you having trouble with your audio? Unmute, Ms. Gonzalez.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm fine. And what was the question?
Are you at an airport? Are you at the airport, Ms. Gonzalez?
We're taking vote for the approval of minutes for October 8th.
Yes, go ahead. I approve.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The minutes for October 8th has been approved. Next, we have our consent agenda with Item 2A, approval of amended MPS home visit policy, and 2B, approval of 2020 through 21 compliance monitoring and certification of board compliance review for MSA 4, 6, and Bell. 4, 6, 7, and Bell. Are there any public comments? If there's no public comments, do board members have any comments or questions on these two consent items? Perfect. If there are no questions from the board on either consent items, we can approve the consent items as presented. Would a board member like to move to approve both consent items?
So moved. Can we have a short overview?
Of course. Mr. Yilmaz, would you like to present?
Yes, sure. Hi, everybody. Good evening. This is David Yilmaz, the Chief Accountability Officer. Hi, Dr. Yapanel. I remember at one of the past board meetings, you were asking about virtual home visits. Now, I mean, the team, the home office team, the principals, the school leaders are all proposing that we have virtual home visits in our policy. So we have added a section for virtual home visit procedures and etiquette, thanks to Dr. Lopez. One major change is the compensation for virtual home visits. So the principals recommended $25 per virtual home visit. So that's what we have in the proposed policy. And we are going to revisit this at the end of the fiscal year, see how things look for the new year. So those are the major changes, adding virtual home visit procedures, the pay, $25 per virtual home visits, the hours, teachers are going to do it after school hours, not during the work hours, so that it's a home visit. We also put some statements about number of staff doing the home visit, no more than 3, recommended 2. And of course, everything with pre-approval from the principal. So those were kind of the updates made to the policy. Last year, we had a great number of home visits. This year, it's very low. And we want to encourage more and more virtual and, if safe, you know, in-person home visits. So hopefully, this is going to help.
I think virtual home visits are much easier to do rather than in person. I mean, it requires less time and effort in the side of teachers. So I really hope to see expanded numbers with this policy change.
Yes, we are recommending 20 to 30 minutes, no more than 30. And after school hour scheduling, yes, there should be more and more of those, hopefully. I mean, schools are asking. And a little compensation, you know, will help. And it's already budgeted, I mean.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then the item B as well, a short
overview. The other one, yes, is a very routine annual LAUSD item that the board certifies, you know, we are in compliance with all those 25 areas in the document. So they do come make oversight visits and check all those documents. So principals signed that we are compliant. Now we are asking the board chair will be signing that, you know, we comply with all those 25 areas. Last year there were 23. This year they added 2 more. One is regarding sexual harassment notifications, like having posters in the bathrooms and locker rooms. And Dr. Lopez is overseeing it. The other one is about providing technology and, you know, devices to students with disabilities, making sure they have access to devices and, you know, FAPE. So those are the 2 new ones. We comply with all of them, and you know, every year we certify that, you know, we do comply with them.
If Rebbe is signing, I am all for it.
Yep.
Alrighty, are there any other questions in regards to the consent items? Perfect. Would a board member like to move to approve both consent items?
Yes, I'd like to make the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Yabanos. Sorry, who was that?
Dikbev.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Dikbev. So now I'll take vote. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yabanos?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbev?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The consent items have been approved. That's the end of our consent items. Next on the agenda, we'll move on to our action items. Starting with action item 3A, approval of vendor expenses over $25,000 and approval of new vendors and ongoing contracts over $25,000. Mr. Orozov, our chief financial officer, will be presenting this item. Mr. Orozov?
Yes, good evening, board members and Magnolia family. So as you may remember, per our fiscal policies, any contract over $25,000 is brought to the board for approval. But there's been a slight, difference to that policy lately. On July 23rd, board actually passed a resolution giving some flexibility to our CEO and superintendent to, sign and commit for the contracts, even exceeding $25,000, to be able to, open the schools or, any items related to COVID-19. And as part of that resolution, there were some contracts signed to be able to expedite the efforts when it comes to fighting the COVID-19 and reopening the schools and providing services in distance education as well. Mr. Rubalcava had improved our superintendent. Mr. Rubalcava had approved some, contracts over $25,000 since July 23rd. The initial list of all the contracts and master list of vendors was actually provided to the board in June meeting. But this is actually a listing of any vendors that were paid more than $25,000 since July 1. And we have close to, I think it's 10 vendors that we are looking at in front of you. Some of them actually were approved back in June, but we had an increase in the amount. That's why we wanted to bring them back to your attention. Again, the default policy is to bring it to your attention before the contracts are signed, but given the unprecedented situation here, and to be able to expedite the signing process of the contract due to the COVID-19, there was a resolution which granted a flexibility to the superintendent, and there were some contract signs using that flexibility. Before you are the vendors that were paid more than budgeted to be paid more than $25,000 in the fiscal 2021. If you have any questions and regarding any of the vendors or any other questions, I'm happy to address. But again, this is just the additional contracts. This is not the entire list of vendors exceeding the $25,000. The master list of vendors actually was approved by the board in June 2020.
Before the board members ask their comments or questions, is there any questions or comments from the public? All right, board members, do you have any comments or questions regarding this item?
Yes, this is Mekhan. Serdar, just to clarify, maybe you mentioned it, so you said that there are new vendors here that were not on the original list from June 23rd?
That's right. We have both. We have some existing vendors that we had an increase in the contracted amount, and we have new vendors that we
did not have. Can you just go over the new ones?
I might need some help with that, but I know that okay. Christian Brothers is new. I'm starting from the bottom, but Brain Pop we used to have, right, Alfredo?
Yeah. Let's just give Patrick a chance to just speak on each one, so the board has just a sense of what the goods or services provided and some of the key facts. So Patrick, can you just give the board a quick update of what we did with Christian Brothers?
Yes, hi, this is Patrick Contiveros, General Counsel and Director of Facilities. Christian Brothers is on this list because they, as you probably know, the guidance from state and local officials is to, make sure that your HVAC units are well maintained, and in particular, if possible, have MERV 13 filters in them. So Christian Brothers was a vendor that we worked with on our MSA1 new construction project. They did a really good job there. They had already been contracted to maintain the HVAC unit at the MSA1 new building. Because we didn't really know the timing for going back to school, and obviously to make sure that our staff was in a safe environment, we engaged them to service our HVAC units, as well as procure and install the MERV 13 filters. So that's why they're on this list. Presently, they're working on MSA-1, both buildings, MSA-7, MSA Santa Ana, and MSA San Diego. They've done the servicing right now, as you might imagine. Procuring MERV 13 filters is very difficult. There's obviously been a rush to procure those, so they were able to procure them for MSA Santa Ana and one of the buildings at MSA 1, but they are still trying to source the balance of the filters.
All right, thank you, Patrick. If we go to the list, Russell, can you go back to the list just so we could turn it over to a specific member? So these are new. So T-Mobile's not new, and the board was aware of the hotspots that we needed to purchase when the pandemic did hit in March. And now with the new year, we purchased more hotspots for ensuring that our kids are connected, and they're acquiring all the services, academic and so forth, from T-Mobile. So new here on this list, the M&M company. This would be the student class math sanitizer, stands, tree, ply, disposable. So this is the obviously vendor we chose to get these, mask and other equipments. And this would be for a semester's worth of, equipment or stock. So we did make that purchase across all the schools for that mask and sanitizer for semester's worth. So if we do open in January, then we will have enough supply for the rest of the year. Flywheel, I'll turn it over to Suat. Suat worked closely with the schools to purchase these staff and student barriers. Suat, you want to talk a little bit about the flywheel?
Yes. Well, I have a little bit more generalized, actually, summary of all the purchases. We used several, actually, new vendors for the dividers, the separators. Starting from July 1st, we used actually the authority that our board gave to Mr. Rubalcava to proceed actually without the pre-approval for the new vendors. Currently, starting from July 1st until now, the total dollar amount that we purchased actually for PPE, personal protective equipment and signages, is around $427,000. We also use the authority actually to proceed for hotspots. You will see some vendors over there. That's totaling around $225,000. This is an estimate because this also includes the monthly bills that our schools are charged.
For the sake of just the report here, the amounts are already here listed on this budget file. So the amounts are not important, more so the process of why we ended up getting the equipment.
Yeah, the reason is very simple. The reason is why the board gave actually Alfredo the authority, because we needed to be quick. The students needed, for example, Chromebooks, and we didn't have actually Chromebooks from the current vendors that we had. We had to look for alternatives because there was a shortage in the market. So we are talking about like maybe 1,000, 2,000 Chromebooks, let's say. We didn't have Chromebooks at the sizes that we were looking for. Especially there was a shortage in 14-inch Chromebooks. Everybody was looking for a little bit large screen Chromebooks, including all the other district schools as well. And there was a huge shortage that we had to actually wait for months to receive, even with this vendor, that we quickly actually took the step to make the purchase. So this is the reason, just to be quick. Same thing actually for the PPE equipment at the time. Right now we have a lot of actually, available vendors. They're trying to actually find us to sell their products. But in July, in August, it was kind of like a hectic. There was no actually available products that we can buy from local vendors. So we had to look for actually someone who can promise us for the next two to 2 weeks to 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks window to be able to, you know, bring those products. So being fast was the issue. So we had to quickly actually give the, you know, find the lowest bid or the most actually reasonable one and go with that. That's the reason.
Thank you, Suat. So to Suat's point, the flywheel vendor, those are the dividers that we're placing on the desk for the school sites. So those obviously will ensure an extra layer of protection once our kids are on site to have that protection. Staff will have those barriers as well. And then different spaces across the schools will have those dividers. For the eLuma online therapy, Erdinch, you want to speak a little bit about that process now that we're doing distance learning and that online platform?
Yes, eLuma Speech Services, this is our new special education vendor the board approved to conduct speech language services online. And this company is one of the leading national companies which is able to provide those services. And then we contracted with them right away after March 16 to provide continuity of the services. So none of the current service providers, other than eLuma right now, they can do online speech service services. So we continue using their services extensively as our special education related services vendor.
Thank you, Erdinch. And then cross country, obviously, when we were going through the reopening plans, we shared with the board that each one of our school sites except MSA 8, that we were going to use certified nursing assistants and registered nurses, and that would be the amount. So now this is coming to fruition. We still expect what we budgeted to be the amount when it comes to using cross country. So those in essence would be the new services. Cross country had already been adopted by the board, but to Sardar's point of some of these existing contracts going above the amounts that the board approved, that's why they're on the list. So the people that presented were just kind of going over all the new services. So hopefully that answered your question, Makan.
I think you're on mute.
Can I jump in with a question, or are we waiting for Makan to respond?
No, I'm good. Thank you. I think I was muted. Thank you.
So I want to understand how this works. Obviously, PPE equipment, we had to buy in haste. We have it. We're going to use it at some point. But something like cross-country services, which are services that we would use obviously more if we were having more students and needing to check students and faculty. How does that work? We're just obligated to them for a flat amount, even if we never open up? Is that?
No, so the way that works, and that's a great question, Rabbi, we do anticipate the amount going up to 500K, but they invoice us on a monthly basis. And currently, when we do run those invoices, right now, those amounts are not as high as we projected. Why? Because as you stated, right now, we only have a certain amount of staff members at the site, and that number is increasing. And also with students, we only have a small number, but that's increasing. Those costs are a little below projected. But as we started to bring on more students, and as we started to implement more health and safety protocols, specifically the CNAs, they've been a bit more active. But what we do is during our COVID calls, we do review expenditure reports with the entire school sites. We've done it once, and right now, again, we're good. But we do believe those services will be ramped up. And again, our objective is to ensure the health and safety of everyone on the site, but I do project that we will come under that 500,000 number, but we do get invoiced every month based on the services that we get per month.
So the similar question to T-Mobile, I imagine that we are not going to get this down to an exact amount of time, but people are using T-Mobile to attend classes, but I assume they're also, how do we allocate that? And the part B to the same question is, there was this moment early in the pandemic where they were giving away some of their services, or at least some of the hotspot suppliers were giving away some of their services. How is that working, and how much of a discount did they give, and how much should we receive?
Okay, so you asked several good questions. So for the how are we distributing hotspots, I think I want to turn over to a principal, because they could tell us how that experience has gone. And then in terms of the purchasing piece discount, I'll turn it over to our lead person from the home office, Rasul, to address that question, because he's the one that works on behalf of MPS and all the schools to get us the best deal, to get us the best product. But I'll turn it over to John Terzi to just share his experience on how he's utilizing hotspots, how he's distributed the hotspots, and the sole purpose of the hotspots. So John, welcome.
Hello everyone. Hello board members and public. So for our school, we did a survey through Parent Square and asked who needs a hotspot, because some of the parents, verbally they visited our office and verbally they told us, you know, they can't afford the internet in the beginning of the pandemic. And so I think we purchased around like 20, since we were small, you know, that was the amount we had. And in the beginning of this school year, we also did a similar survey and purchased another 20 hotspots. And we provided those hotspots to parents based on their needs. And we also provided Chromebooks in addition to, you know, hotspots. So it was from parents' requests and then the survey results.
Thank you, John. Can you talk about a little bit about the distribution? How did you distribute it? Did you distribute them at the school? Did you go to the homes and keep social distance and physical distance, distribute them? How was the distribution piece when it came to giving these to parents?
So yeah, for the distribution, we scheduled different days. Like for sixth graders, we gave like a couple days, seventh graders, eighth graders, similar. So it was kind of drive-through, grab and go distribution. So when the parents, you know, came, we set up a table. They just entered the campus with their car, and we provided hotspots, and we also provided some textbooks as a reference book for them. So we kept, you know, social distancing and follow the guidelines for that. So it took like, I would say like at least 10 days before the school, and whoever needed hotspots and Chromebooks, they were able to get it.
Thank you, John. And I'll turn it over to Rasul. Rasul, can you kind of walk us through your process of how we worked with T-Mobile to not only acquire the devices, but get discounts and all that wonderful stuff that you do on behalf of MPS?
Sure. Yeah, good evening, dear board members. Thank you, Alfredo. So basically, as Mr. Terzi said, the school surveyed, the initial survey was done last year, and we got the initial amounts, and around with the initial amount, I've reached out to all the service providers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and a couple of smaller providers as well to get all the pricing. Normally, this process would go through the RFP process, but still I would get have an idea of the pricing, then reached out to publish RFP and reach out to vendors if the RFP process was done. But due to the urgency, I mean, our CEO got that approval. He could approve this need. So we've just reached out all to the vendors. The average pricing was around $35 a month to $40 a month per hotspot for annual plan. But we got from T-Mobile for $20 a month for with 1 year contract and free hotspot. That was a deal. So it was the cheapest option. I think a lot of discounts were provided by other providers because of the COVID, but still this $20 per month with free hotspot would beat all those pricings. And just recently we've got some requests from our parents that they are visiting Mexico, for example, their relatives for short period of time. Do our T-Mobile cover it? And we've reached out to T-Mobile, so yes, it covers our contract agreement, covers United States and Mexico area. So students would be able to attend classes without any disruption. So that's that. In beginning of the COVID period, of course, we got some free services from Zoom for 60 days, from Google, et cetera, et cetera. We've utilized those services. I think that answers the question.
Thank you, Russell, and thank you, John. And then for added context, obviously, Rabbi, what we experienced from March to June was one phase, right? And then what we experienced from July to the day we opened up our schools in August, that was a new phase because we, had quite a few new students come to us. And with new students comes new needs. So then there was a second shipment of hotspots to ensure everyone's connected. And that percentage is, for us, something we're very proud of, where everyone does have a hotspot and a device, which means that they could learn all the content and all the great stuff that goes along with our teachings. So did that answer your question, Rabbi?
It did. I'm just one little detail again, please. We're paying $20 per student per month. Is that right?
That's correct. $240 per student per year for an annual contract.
$400.
$240.
$240, right. $240, of course. And what would they have to pay if they went in on the open market? Just out of curiosity. I'm not recommending that they should, but just what would be the going rate?
So we got from almost all the vendors the pricing. Of course, we pushed for educational pricing. So average price that we got from other vendors was $35 to $40, almost twice. Some of the providers, they charged for hotspot separately. They sold hotspot device separately. So that was another piece. So I've shared all the pricing, the quotes with the team, mainly with the C team. And we recommended to go with T-Mobile. Of course, we've also discussed with our IT managers at school sites. So IT managers from school sites, they on with their channels, they've also reached out to different vendors and they forwarded what they found, the price quotes. A cheapest option was T-Mobile, the service we are getting from.
No, I think you did a splendid job negotiating this and stuff. I imagine that there will be some people that will try to keep this hotspot after the COVID-19 for themselves. So I think T-Mobile is going to probably try to cut them a deal as well. I think they were very smart to cut their prices to get people on.
That's correct. Yeah, $20, by the way, is for unlimited data plan. So there is no data limit. I just opened the agreement right now in front of me. So there was another catch where other service providers were giving near or like equal or a little bit higher pricing, but there was a 20 gigabytes or 30 gigabytes limit per month, which would impair, I mean, the classroom education, of course, during this intensive distance learning period. So yeah, that's that piece as well.
Thank you.
I have one feedback also. I think for T-Mobile, they also have some programs where they give free broadband for low-income households. What they call is Project 10 Million, and parent or school administrator can apply. So I understand this may not apply to everyone, but even if it applies to some of the students, that option might help reduce the cost. So just as a recommendation for you guys to consider.
Thank you for the feedback, Dr. Dikbosh. We'll look into the program and see how we could leverage that initiative for our school sites. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Is there any other question or comment from the board?
I would just like to say that I'm glad that we have this summary report. I had not been aware of what we had, what had been the dispensation. And now that we're under sort of what I would call a constant emergency, I would like us to have a little more reporting to the board so that we're kept abreast of these things. Just because, you know, in July when we made these decisions, it was, you know, will we get enough? Who are we going to have to fight for? There was no time to breathe. Now I think we need to be cautious and, you know, have a coordinated check back with the board on things.
Yes, definitely, Rabbi. Moving forward, we will bring big bucket items to the board for us to decide on moving forward with any adoption. The next one is going to be the testing program, whether with LAUSD or with any other vendor. We will bring that before the board. And I don't foresee too many other large purchases, but whatever they are, we will bring to the board so the board could fully discuss and we could, as a team, approve.
Thank you.
Any final comments or questions from the board? Perfect. Would any of our board members like to move this motion? The motion is for the board to approve vendor expenses over $25,000 and new vendors and ongoing contracts over $25,000.
I'll make a motion. This is Mick Khan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. I'll now take vote. Rabbi Beliak?
Abstain.
Dr. Yabana?
Yes, thanks for the clarification and additional detail that was very helpful for me.
Dr. Dikbas?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The motion carries with one abstention and five yeses. Moving on to action item 3B, MPS Special Education Policy Bulletin for Alternative Dispute Resolutions Process. Dr. Callahan, our Director of Special Education and Support Services, will be presenting this item. Dr. Callahan?
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for allowing me to present to our wonderful board this evening. Okay. I'm going to go over this actual document because it starts with an explanation of why we're bringing this to the board to request support in this area. The rationale for this policy bulletin under alternative dispute resolution procedures is to provide opportunities for parents, students, and schools to have another level of accountability for resolving matters prior to going to an attorney, going directly to dispute resulting in a lawsuit. The impact should be a reduction in the number of due process cases brought upon Magnolia schools and a reduction in the cost of legal fees and compensatory education, because the services that we're being brought to court for, we're in large part, we're already providing them. So we're thinking that if we could start implementing a program, the first 15 mm-hmm. days that a parent has a concern, which is already written into the law, then maybe we can ward off some of the impact that it's having on our schools. So it goes, you know, the document itself goes over idea, and it goes over the fact that each student does have a right to a free and appropriate public education in their least restrictive environment with the supplemental aids and services that are required to help them access the education. In order to ensure that these rights are received, IDEA provides for the IEP, and then if a parent doesn't feel comfortable with what they're getting in the IEP, they have a right to go to due process. Now, normally in the due process the school can always talk to the parent and say, hey, why don't we resolve this among ourselves prior to this becoming a litigious situation? But what's happening now is the attorneys are directing the parents not to speak with us. So the moment they file a lawsuit, those 15 days are gone. We don't have the opportunity to work with the parent to reach resolve. And so what we'd like to do is implement an alternative dispute resolution process, very similar to our uniform complaint procedures for Title IX, so that parents have another option for addressing their concerns rather than going straight to an attorney. What I did was I met with LA Unified because I think this is a problem that's not Magnolia-wide, it's at least California-wide and probably nationwide as far as special ed services are concerned. And part of that is because if we sue one another, we're beholden to the frivolous lawsuit clause. We can't just file a frivolous lawsuit. However, when it comes to schools, the courts assume that the parents would not file a frivolous lawsuit. But with the help of advocates and attorneys that don't always have the school's or the child's best interest at heart, a lot of these lawsuits are frivolous. So going to the next page, it describes, in the middle of the next page, it starts a little bit further down the, keep going. I've already gone over all of that. Keep going to where it says special education alternative dispute resolution. Okay, so what we would like for our parents to know when they check their kids in is that we do have available an alternative dispute resolution. We'd like to give this information, the letter, the policy bulletin to all parents as they're checking into the school so that they are aware that this process is in place. And this would allow us to have a hearing where we would pull a panel from other schools, and the parent and the person at the school that they're having, you know, that they're having the dispute with would have an opportunity to be heard, and they would have mutual parties there from our stakeholders to hear both sides and hopefully write up a resolution at that time in the form of an IEP. Okay? And so if it does not work and they cannot come to an agreement, then they can always go to the formal mediation or formal due process. But what we're trying to do is put this resolution process in place so that we don't go directly to arbitration. Okay, so my request is that that the board review this and hopefully adopt it so that we can utilize our funds in a more meaningful and effective way by supporting students with services rather than siphoning so much of it off to legal fees. Any questions?
Is there any comments or questions from the public? Okay, board members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
This is Sandra, I do.
Hi, Sandra.
Hi. So have we talked to legal to see about this idea and what have they said?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because we did meet with Young Million Core and we did meet with LA Unify. And I basically took the law and created the policy using the law that Young Minion Core and LA Unified brought to me. So all of this is from the actual policy and procedures that's compiled between those two resources. And that is a very good point because we want to make sure that we're not violating anybody's laws and rights as we do this.
You know what I would have wanted to see, like, I don't know if it would be considered like a contract, but something aligns of an idea of like an IEP of a student and like what are the plan is, like the requirements of the parents, and just like a plan and see their rights and our rights on paper and just kind of figure out from there to see if this is a good extra document to have on top of what we already do. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, I it does make sense. So in this document, it is an outline of all of the laws. I didn't read everything, but it is here. And it goes over the laws and the rights that the parents and the children have in terms of due process. The rights, well, basically all the rights belong to the parents and the students. We do have an opportunity if the parent chooses, they can utilize those first 15 days, even if they've already filed a due process case. We still legally have 15 days to reach resolve with our parents. But because we don't have anything officially in place, we're not able to execute that practice because their attorneys are coming in saying, do not talk to the school. I'm on board now. They have to talk through me. But if we have a procedure in place and the parents are aware of this procedure, this basically gives them the option and it gradually becomes the norm for our schools and our parents. So it takes time for everyone to get on board with this. It's not something that we can legally mandate, but we would like to have it available to parents as an alternative and also give them the information up front before anyone's upset, before we're heated and emotional, because our teams really really do bend over backward to try and support our parents. But sometimes we reach an impasse, and it would be great if we could pull a team together that's neutral, and they can allow both sides to be heard, and then design an IEP to support the child without having to go to court to make that happen.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm assuming that we get our guidelines also from LAUSD. So would this be in compliance with LAUSD policies as well?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I actually met with them and they helped me develop it.
So how come we don't have anything legal and just in general, not just like Magnolia wise, but I mean, from like LAUSD or, you know what I mean?
Well, they do this in LA Unified. They have it available. But like I said, they can't mandate it, but it is available to the parents. LA Unified is not as nice as a lot of the charter schools are. And so a lot of times when the parents really are a lot more angry when they get to that point, but it is available at the public schools that are not charters as well. And some of the charters are writing alternative dispute resolutions as well, because there were probably about 13 or 14 of the larger charter schools at the actual meeting that I attended with LA Unified.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out as a parent aspect, like how I would handle this. Like so when you provide the plan of the student, you would add this to their plan?
No. You mean like their regular IEP?
Yes. You add this? Okay.
So no, this is I would just, like. Oh, go ahead, Anne.
Sorry. This is just okay. If they have some type of complaint, then this is what we would do, right?
Yes. What I'd like to do is let them know it's available before there is a complaint. Let them know that we do have a procedure in place where we can work to reach resolve. We don't have to use these funds that could support your child in getting a BII or some additional support that they may need to access the curriculum. We'd like to use our funds more, I want to say appropriately, but in a way that is benefiting the students. So I would like to give this to all parents at the beginning of the year, when they're checking their kids in, so they know this is available, just like mm-hmm. we let them know that a uniform complaint procedure is available.
Yes.
And then when we have the IEP, they already know that this is available, but I don't want them to feel like we're like shoving it down their throat at an IEP. We try to do our IEPs in a way that everyone has a voice, everyone's a part of the team, and we're all designing the best program for your child.
Okay. Okay, I don't know if any other board members have any opinions on this matter.
I really do appreciate your feedback from a parental standpoint too. It's very helpful.
Yeah, and not only that, but I do have friends that had kids that had IUPs, and I even mm-hmm. have relatives that are dealing with that. So I'm just thinking of their concern as well. Like as a mom, like what would I want or wouldn't want?
Right.
Rabbi Belik, did you have a question or a comment?
No, on one hand, this is very innovative. It does feel like everything but an agreement to go to arbitration as opposed to going to court. Everything but in the binding thing. There's no binding thing here. This is voluntary.
Right.
And I don't know what we spend a year working these things out, but I imagine that we are often in a situation where we're being sued just because that has been the culture and does not have necessarily anything to do with what we've tried to do or how we've tried to respond. If you have a situation where, as you're describing it, you have 15 days to respond and the lawyers are whispering in their ears, we can do better. That does create a difficult situation. Do you have any figures about what it's costing us?
I do. I'm glad you asked that question. And it's interesting because most of our situations are resolved without going to mediation because our teams actually do work to do what's best for the child. And a lot of times our attorneys can get their attorneys to realize that our schools have already done an excellent job of supporting their child. But the problem is once they've gone to the point of getting an attorney and their attorney does not allow them to talk to us anymore, it costs us on the average $40,000. That's the low end for any case without going to court, without getting to mediation. This is just once we have to pay both sides attorney's fees and whatever compensatory or assessment cost or whatever other costs come out of the agreement, the average is about $40,000. So when we're spending that and last year we had a lot of cases last year. We may have had, I think, 6 or 7 cases last year. And one of them, we ended up having to pay for a child to go to a non-public school. So, and a lot of these are cases that are coming in with attorneys when they check in. We have a situation at MSA 6 where the child came in with an attorney. He's just checked in and, you know, and they're asking us to pay for another placement for the child.
I've seen both ends of this situation where people have been in situations where the school district has not been responsive or the school has not been responsive and it creates anger. And then I've seen situations where I would estimate that what's really happening is that a family that has tremendous pressure because of the special needs tries to deal with the economic disparities by making the school carry the burden. I can see how there's an incentive for lawyers to amp up the situation.
Yeah. And really, honestly, we provide so much more support than they get anywhere else. I think that's why our percentage is almost 20% across the board when the district gets about 10 or 11%. And most charters have about 10 to 11% students with special needs. But our program is really an excellent program. And if we got into these mediation situations and we were the ones at fault and we did not try to do what was best for the child and it didn't turn out that that was the outcome, then this would be a totally different conversation. But I think that on behalf of the teachers that are working so hard, we're not perfect, we're still growing, but the teams are just really giving 110%. And if we could have another option for parents before they go to an attorney, I think it might make a difference in building our culture and utilizing funds to actually go back into the classroom.
So I have only one additional question right now, and that is, you say that there are other schools that are implementing these kinds of programs. Mm-hmm. I assume you've seen the features of these kinds of programs. Anything notable? No. That
I have not. This is really cutting edge. We're all putting it together now, and we're all doing it now. So I've not seen the impact except for in LA Unify. Sorry to cut you off with that, but I just wanted to very, very transparent and let you know. This is very, it's very progressive and it's very proactive. And I understand that the law would not allow us to mandate anything like this, but to make it available as an alternative, I think would have a positive impact for our students.
I move that we take a large part of the money that we save here and plaster billboards all over California that tout the unique ability of our charter school, the heck with the rest of them, to bring this. I realize it's not perfect, but it's a tremendous, people talk about trying to find alternative means. I don't think you're going to win any prizes at the Bar Association, but I do think this is very, very important. Have there been any pushback from the bar?
No, you will hear tonight from, I believe Rebecca is presenting tonight. And Rebecca personally told me that she's behind this 100%. Lisa Core is behind it. And yes, it will reduce the funds that they would get. But they were saying in the conversation with them, they were saying that there are enough schools out there who are not working hard and not doing a good job with helping to support students to reach their optimal level of performance. And you guys work so hard at Magnolia to try and do the opposite. So you'll hear from them. You can ask Rebecca directly, because the day before that she mentioned that she's behind it 100%.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
Are there any final questions or comments from board?
No, I think we're ready to approve.
Alrighty. The motion is for the board to approve the Special Education Policy Bulletin Alternative Dispute Resolution Procedures for Magnolia Public Schools. Would any of our board members like to move this motion?
I make the motion. This is Sandra.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak. I will now take roll. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes, and I also would like to thank Dr. Callahan for this diligent work, and I really appreciate all these efforts. Thank you.
Very welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Yapanel. Dr. Digbus?
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes, but I just want to say something. Next time, if we ever have any legal documents checked by legal, please, can we have just like a back sheet with the signature of Alfredo and the legal person signing them, just, you know, for our sake, please?
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, Sandra. Thank you. So, yes.
Thank you, Ms. Covarrubias. Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you. The motion carries unanimously.
Yeah. Thank you, wonderful board. I'm just going to sign off.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Callahan. So once again, and for people who are joining us now, action item 3C has been tabled. So thank you. That concludes our action items agenda for tonight's meeting. Next, we have closed session. Rabbi Beliak, may you please announce the closed session item?
We have two matters that we're going to discuss in closed session, and we'll report back after the closed session.
Can we have a 5-minute break in between?
Oh, yes, of course.
To the closed session. Okay. Thank you.
The link?
I think it's just a different room that they are going to put us in.
Yes, I already put you in breakout room. Oh, give me 1 second.
Facilitating the board meeting, we would try to relive awesome. Old
Everyone,
moments.
Welcome back for open session. The time is 9:18. Rabbi Belia, do you have any actions to report out?
Yes, I want to report that we had a number of discussions.
We can't hear you, Rabbi.
I want to report that we had a number of discussions and we've asked staff to deal with some of the matters. They've agreed that they'll do that.
Great. So that's the end of our agenda. Rabbi Beliak, may you please adjourn the meeting? The time is 9:19.
At 9:19, I adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.